Hello, and welcome to the Outpost Frequencies, brought to you by thelastmovieoutpost.com, www.lastmovieoutpost.com, where you can find all of your movie reviews and everything else. That's a joke from last week. If you weren't here, then you missed it. It's your own fault. But yes, for all your movie news reviews and everything cool about films, with us this evening for our live stream is Sean, who's drinking.
Hello.
And Drunken Yoda.
Well, coincidentally, not it's not drinking, weirdly enough. So there you go. How you guys doing tonight?
I've had a funny week. People who listen to the podcast know I missed this week, unfortunately, just due to some health reasons, but I should be back next week. But yeah, it's been a funny week for me. How about you, Sean?
It's been a pretty good week for me. Just Friday evening, after a week, I finally shot a deer I'd been chasing all week. A pretty big one. That was pretty big. And Kyle Rittenhouse got found innocent. We can talk about it now without worrying about YouTube zucking us.
That is a big deal. I mean, it's like, oh, good. I can still defend myself if... I just think that I don't know what bunny hole I fell down where a white guy killing who has no priors, who has no record, who is a lifeguard and just wanted to clean the streets, kills a pedophile who's screaming the N-word, is considered white supremacy. What the hell is going on in this world that the kid that kills the guy screaming the N-word is considered the white supremacist?
Oh, it's better than that. Like, all over Facebook, and I don't have any leftist friends, but friends have leftist friends. And I would see this ranting, and they're like, those victims. And I'd always say, like, the first guy had raped five boys. The second guy, DUI, drug, felony gun possession, punched his own grandma in the face, stalked, arrested for domestic abuse. The other guy, burglar, you know, this is the side of the guys that you're raising up to, you know, martyrdom.
Yeah, I know. It's like we tore down statues of Robert E. Lee, who did some shit 165 years ago, but this guy screaming the N-word a year and a half ago, that's okay.
Well, he didn't use hard R at the end, so you can.
It doesn't matter.
Apparently.
Yeah. That's the get out of jail free card. I don't think so.
I heard that Sean King posthumously awarded him the N word pass, though, so it's okay now. Sean King said it was okay.
Who, for those of you who don't know, Sean King claims he's black, but is actually a white guy. He's the Rachel Dolezal. Kind of thing where it's a white person pretending to be black. So that isn't really what we want to talk about, though. George, we just destroyed everything from you.
I have absolutely no dog in the fight because, I mean, apart from listening to you guys talk about it, I have no idea who Kyle Rittenhouse was.
Well, in the part of the world that actually matters here in the U.S., it was pretty big news. For every other country that hasn't landed on the moon, I'm sure that...
Excuse me, I think I'll have you know that the Queen over here has opened a supermarket, so...
Oh, congratulations.
Actually, there are rumors going around, not that we're going to talk about conspiracy theories, but there's a rumors going around that she's already dead but been put on ice, but they can't announce her dead until after Christmas.
Oh, yeah, that's what they did with Walt Disney. I think his head in a jar somewhere. Story.
Exactly. So anyway, on to movies. I'll tell you what did happen movie wise with me. This is not a big deal. But yesterday I got called by Sky News, who obviously Sky News, and they do international news and stuff. But they called me because one of the old railway lines down near where I live is just reopened after many, many years. I think it was 49 years. They just reopened it, and they wanted some footage, which I own. So that was on Sky News, which I was quite pleased about.
Is there a way to view a clip of this on YouTube or something? Can we see a little?
I don't know. I've got to get a hold of them because I did see it, and I tried to record it, and then when I recorded it, I accidentally missed the sound. So, you know, professional video editor here.
Your big break, can you...
Yeah. It wasn't that big. What was nice was they paid me for it, so it was kind of money for old rope, which is nice.
What else?
So anyway, let's talk about some movie news. Now we've had the hot stories for this week is, we'll go sort of down in them in order. Lucasfilm on fire once again.
Pardon me, George, I'm sorry, but I do. I know that this is not. I'm interrupting you. I'm taking over the show again. I apologize.
That's right.
But I do want to go on Alec Baldwin watch, who is still at large.
I was just going to say, yeah.
He's still at large. You know, he's armed and dangerous. Please be careful. If you see Alec Baldwin, call the police. There is another lawsuit coming from the script supervisor who corroborates the claim that he was not supposed to even, that scene was not called for him to fire the gun. So that's your Alec Baldwin update for the week. We've been on top. This is 4 weeks in a row now, and now I hate to let it go. You know, I don't want to not give our update out because we've been, quite frankly, there's a bit of schadenfreude because Alec Baldwin is such a douchebag. So it's fine with me that we're
it's good
keeping
because
the story hyped.
Yeah, it's good because I'd completely forgotten about it. So it's good that you brought it back to my attention.
There is a second lawsuit. There is more corroboration. I got to say, the more I hear about this thing, the more I think that Baldwin is... He's manslaughter is looking more and more like a possibility. Whether or not he gets convicted or not, it definitely looks like more and more of a possibility because there is just way too much going on here and way too
there's a lawsuit waiting to happen somewhere along the line.
Yeah.
For sure.
Amazing how much they're willing to bend over backwards for Alec Baldwin and trash Kyle Rittenhouse, but hey,
it's kind of is Alec still a big draw? Don't know, he's on his way out.
This is just a big publicity stunt. Lady comes out a couple of weeks later, I'm fine.
I wonder who'll play him in the movie. Yeah, like, I think we said that last week, didn't we? Daniel,
his younger brother,
yeah,
I can't remember his name, Billy Baldwin. Is he even alive?
So anyway, so on with actual news, as opposed to Alec Baldwin watch. Yeah, Lucasfilm is under fire again. Now, I mean, this when I read this, I thought to myself, oh, it's November. It's Lucasfilm.
I told you.
I genuinely can't understand.
Sorry,
what has happened in this? Are you all right there, Luke?
Just repeat the story again. It had an audio issue.
Okay, basically, Kathleen Kennedy looks like she signed another 3-year contract. She was supposed to be out in October of this year, but she signed a new 3-year contract to stay on at Lucasfilm. This is the Kathleen Kennedy who took one of the most beloved movie franchises known around the world, literally sort of seen by everyone, whether you love it or hate it, you've seen Star Wars.
Police and Academy. She
personal favorite of mine.
Don't get me started on the sixth one when Steve Guttenberg left, because that was just awful. took Star Wars, and I mean, I'm going to say it, as a huge Star Wars fan, completely flushed it down the toilet with the awful sequel trilogy. It was her responsibility as producer. The way I still compare this to what Kevin Feige did with Iron Man to Endgame, he as the producer oversaw all of those movies with different directors and actors and still managed to combine them in a beautiful tie-up. You know, no matter what you think of the MCU, it was a cinematic achievement. And all Kathleen Kennedy had to do was literally produce 3 good Star Wars movies, and it started out okay, and then it went downhill, and then downhill even further. But yet, she somehow has kept her job.
It's called failing up. George, Mr. WWW, every chance you get, it's Kevin Feige.
Feige, sorry. Yeah, I don't know why I say so. It's because I, It's weird because I've seen.
You want to play the game? Let's play the game.
You guys are going to sharpshoot each other for the next 2 hours.
It's grammar Nazis. Edit.
Let's not even go there because you're all speaking American English, so it's obviously incorrect.
We used American English to land on the moon.
We use American English to fake the moon landing. What'd you do?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, Kubrick. That was all done by a British director.
Kubrick faked the moon landing using English.
Yeah. Anyway, where were we? I'm completely lost the point now. So Kathleen Kennedy. Failing up. That's where we got to. Failing up. Yeah. So she has managed to ruin Star Wars for millions of fans around the country or around the world, and now she has kept her job. Failing up.
There's some dirt, you know. Spielberg, you know, groped her or something at some point.
She's got some pictures of Iger in something that must be pretty horrific. Because there is none of this makes any sense to me.
Yeah. That and, you know, it is current year where, you know, we have to have women and, you know, so you combine those two things. I mean, she's been around forever, right? Wasn't she, like, since Raiders of Jaws or something?
Funny thing is looking into this, I've been through quite a few videos and everything else, and how much is true, I don't know. But from what I've heard, she was Spielberg's assistant, but she kept butting in with ideas that he kind of then just went with, and apparently that makes you a producer.
You think you could you suck the director's dick for years? You think you got some input? I don't know.
Yeah, that's really what it is. It's that simple.
It's how Kamala Harris got to vice president.
For me, it's horrible because being a fan, I lived in hope that there was going to be something coming out of the future for Star Wars. And the TV series, I've been enjoying them. They have been good. But ultimately, you know, the movies is where it's at. You know, I've always enjoyed seeing Star Wars on the big screen, but I'm just not excited about anything. Well, actually saying that, most of the stuff's been cancelled now. Because along with that news, Patty Jenkins, who directed both the Wonder Womans and that fabulous Wonder Woman 84, has now been her movie Rogue Squadron is now put on full hiatus, and it doesn't look like he's going to get a release at all now.
Thank God for small favors.
It was Patty Jenkins after 84 when she had creative control over Wonder Woman. It was really she's doing a Star Wars film because.
I think Patty Jenkins is a reasonable director. Like, she could take a decent script, and she's got a good visual eye, and she seems to do pacing okay. But when she tries to run her ideas in the script, you get Wonder Woman 84, which was clearly there was mushrooms going on. That's all I can think of.
It is funny how some people are good directors, but not particularly good writers.
Yeah. Yeah,
Zack Snyder.
you're not wrong, George. Zack Snyder.
Let's say Sean said that exactly the same time because that's immediately where my mind went to 300.
Yeah, perfect example. I mean, the Dawn of the Dead remake, 300 were great, but then somebody else wrote them. Give it to somebody.
I still think Watchmen is still quite good.
Yeah, I do too.
It went off the story a little bit, but I still think Watchmen is still very good.
It's an improvement over the comic book story, really.
But when you compare it to stuff like Sucker Punch and Army of the Dead, I mean, just, you know.
Can you believe that he touted Sucker Punch as women's empowerment? God damn.
I mean, it's just,
you know, feel your empowerment through rape. That's how a woman takes her powers, through rape.
It was
what
I haven't seen it for a long time. I remember it looking quite spectacular.
Oh, it looks great, yeah.
But then, without a story, it doesn't matter how good it looks. I always compare that to Paris Hilton. I mean, she looks quite good, but there's not much going on upstairs, is there? So,
well, you know, she just put out some interesting. I gotta look it up because I'm going to be talking out my ass here. But she put out some interesting. I don't know, sound bites or something recently about how bad Hollywood is and how hard it is. And like, she's like, I wouldn't have done the things that I did and I wish I hadn't, that kind of stuff. So there, you know, she's hitting 40s, you know, I don't think she has any kids or anything. It's funny how some of these sex pots, they hit 40, they got nothing. They realize this is a bad idea, you know?
I haven't given birth to children, but I can to groomers and other such things.
She'll just have to console herself with the billions of dollars her family.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying she isn't, but I mean, the billions of dollars. I mean, it kind of goes to the fact that you can have billions of dollars, but if you don't have anybody, what good is it? You know, and I think she's kind of realizing that to a certain extent. That was, I could be completely off mark on this. It just was my impression on the little, you know, tidbit of soundbite that passed through my field of vision as I was working my way through YouTube. So if I'm wrong,
I was going to say, your brain sort of goes, oh, that's interesting. Paris Hilton, move on.
Yeah. You know, yeah. It's a reflex, you know.
Yeah. She recently got married or something, right? That's the only reason she's in the news again is because they...
Maybe that's it. Maybe, you know, living a more domestic type life or a committed relationship or something has kind of made her rethink being a...
Doing the dishes.
As South Park put it, a stupid, spoiled whore.
Yeah.
She's somebody who's never caught my attention or interest, but like I say, I mean, you know, she's not an unattractive lady, but like I say, I can't imagine just sort of having an intellectual conversation with her. And that's what I think with quite a lot of movies is they look wonderful. Somebody was saying about the cinematography of Rise of Skywalker the other day, and it's kind of, it doesn't matter how beautiful a movie looks if there is an absolutely terrible story running through it. It doesn't matter.
So what's the next story, George?
Okay, next one then I thought we could talk about is Lethal Weapon 5 seems to have found a director. Now, obviously, Richard Donner sadly passed away last year.
They are too old for this shit.
Yeah.
I mean, that was said in the first one. That was said in the first movie, wasn't it?
What's he, like 80? So, I think Danny Glover's in his 80s.
He's probably knocking on the door at 90, really.
I mean, it's the same. Well, obviously, because Richard Donner was 91 when he passed away, so I mean, he was certainly old. But apparently, the new director, the person that Richard Donner wanted to direct it, was Mel Gibson himself.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we make of that?
Mm. I mean, it could be good. It could be bad. You know, I don't know. Mel makes some pretty good movies.
He does. You know, I was going to say the same, that I, you know, quite a few of his films, they are quite decent and they're very, very watchable.
Did you guys ever see the South Park Imagination Land trilogy?
No.
By any chance? South Park is some of the greatest satire out there, and some of the greatest biting satire. And when they portray Mel Gibson's all, like, they actually use like photographs of him in different, you know, like, rather than the animated. Side. Yeah. And he's always like naked except for his underwear. He's always going, my nipples are hard. They're so hard. He's twisting them and everything. And they're asking him, it's like, you know, how to figure out how to get the kids out of imagination land, which is where, you know, stories come from and all that. And he puts out a brilliant story. It's like, boy, say what you will about Mel Gibson, the man knows story structure. and he did, even though he's a complete lunatic. You know.
Yeah.
So I think he could do a good job.
For a little while back there, his career was kind of in question, wasn't it? Because he had
they canceled rant. Him for a little while. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he's back.
He's kind of back. He'll never be what he was, you know, the big star that he was, but it's a shame. I mean, he was one of the more likable guys in the 80s. And fun. You know, he had a great, you know, the Lethal Weapon really gave him that that oddball action hero personality with the sense of humor and all that. And then it all came crashing down because he couldn't stop talking about the Jews or something. I don't remember what it was.
That's kind of all I can remember was that is, I think I remember the parody on Family Guy when he sort of, Mel Gibson was apologizing and he was like, "I apologize for the Jews. I apologize that you've got big noses and all this kind of stuff." And that's kind of all I remember about it.
Have you seen that meme? And I have to kind of paraphrase here because I don't remember exactly, but it's like, it's Gibson. He's like, "I apologize to the Jews for saying that you control Hollywood and the media, so please let me have my job back in Hollywood and the media."
It's sort of strange how some people do hit hard times but then seem to just bounce back, and then other people get hit and they just not lose it, but they kind of lose everything in control of the whole situation. Whereas kind of in Hollywood, is it a case of if you just give it enough time, people will forget about it and you can move on and do what you like?
I tell you, the one thing is Robert Downey Jr. really helped him. And in turn, or I should say he helped him after the fact. But before, when Downey was having all kinds of problems, he said basically Mel Gibson saved his life. And they worked together on this old movie that I like that nobody else does. I mean, it's not a great movie, but I like it. It's called Air America.
Oh, it's a great movie. It's a great movie.
But that's where they became friends, as I understand it. And he helped Downey through a lot of his dark times. And then, you know, when Downey became, you know, Iron Man and really got his life back together, became probably the biggest superstar of the planet for several years, he came out and publicly said, you know, it's time to, you know, you need to forgive Gibson. We need to, you know, he's a good man. He had, you know, we all have our bad times, and he stood by him, and you got to give him a lot of respect for that.
I believe Jodie Foster did too at the time. She publicly
She did. That's true. And she, you know, that group, they, you know, they knew each other, and cause Jodie Foster, I think, starred with Mel in Maverick. Another one I really love. I think
it's also a good,
I've watched that recently. Yeah, I watched that recently. It's great. Yeah. Great movie.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I love it when Danny Glover robs the bank and they're like,
"Yeah,
don't."
I tell you, a recent Mel Gibson film, if you guys didn't see it from last year, was Fat Man. That's a great movie.
I really liked Fat Man. It's because I'm not a fan of Christmas, but I really like that. I really felt for Mel because he played Santa Claus, if you haven't seen the movie, but Santa Claus is kind of really fed up with doing it. And
it should point out though, it's not exactly a comedy though. So people, I know a lot of people thought it was going to be this satire, and there's some comedy, but it's played pretty straight.
I'd call it a very black comedy is the way I'd put it.
Yeah, I would.
It's not like a laugh out loud comedy, but there are moments in it where you find yourself laughing at the situation. I really enjoyed it. Was that? And again, I mean, with Mel, I mean, obviously he's kind of one of those people over here that's loved in Scotland because of what he did for Braveheart and Scottish accents.
There you go. Kind of like Kevin Costner.
Russell Crowe for Robin Hood as well, because I mean that was that accent was.
How good was Russell Crowe's accent in Master and Commander, which by the way is a perfect movie?
I saw that recently, and I didn't find any fault with it. So no, I couldn't find any fault with it. I did recently. It's funny when you say about accents, because I did watch Last Night in Soho. We can talk about in a minute, maybe, because I really liked it. But the girl was from a place called Redruth in Cornwall when I was born on the very cusp of Cornwall. And when she said she was born in Cornwall and her accent, I went, "Oh, she was doing Cornish," because it didn't come off very well.
I'm going to be watching that later today, so I'll
drink a Red Bull or something before you start.
Well, you know, I've seen one. Was it your review that was up there?
Me, mine.
Yeah, okay. You seem to love it. You said it's one of your top five of the year.
Yeah.
And you hate it, Sean. So
I don't despise. I just it committed the number one crime to me a movie could commit is that it bored me. And
it bored you.
That's it.
See, I generally like Edgar Wright.
So I do too.
I'm going to give it a shot.
I think I said in my review, I love Edgar's early stuff. There's a series you guys may not have heard of called Space with absolutely love it. The editing, the movie or references, the Cornetto Easter trilogy, eggs. Exactly. And you know, I love those movies. And I'm a big fan of Scott Pilgrim as well. I know.
That's one I don't like. So there you go. So I mean, it's not perfect. I liked Baby Driver a lot.
I didn't like Baby Driver.
Oh, see, I thought Baby Driver was, again, the attention to detail in the editing and everything. His editing in Last Night in Soho is on par with the Cornetto movies, but done in a much more subtle way, where it's quite obvious in a lot of the... what's the other one? Scott Pilgrim. The editing there is obvious, you know, the way it's all done and the way it played out. It's like watching a comic book, whereas... This one, the editing, I thought was, I've not seen editing like it all year. It's absolutely brilliant. And the same with the special effects, because of the way it's done, that basically you have two characters and one is a reflection of the other. And there are times when they walk past windows and you just see the reflection in the background, just out of the corner of your eye. And I thought the story played out brilliantly well. I don't want to sort of spoil too much. It fools you into thinking you know where it's going, but that's not quite the case. And I really enjoyed it. Really,
I'm going to give it a second try just because you like it so much. I'm going to give it another try, but it was a slog for me.
I was going to say I was expecting a slow boil, and that's what I got. The first act, I think, is a good sort of 20 minutes, half an hour, and that's just setting up the characters, and then the story doesn't start.
If somebody had told me that before I started watching it, I think I probably would have. You know, if you'd seen it before me and been like, it's a slow boil, then I probably would have, you know.
I know what you mean. Yeah, sometimes you don't expect a slow boil. But I found so much happened in the first act to set the characters up. And then the story doesn't actually start until she moves out of the university. And again, she's not spoiling too much. That's when the movie really starts. And then the third act for me was just, it was fantastic. Absolutely. Really loved it. Really, really loved it.
I'm going to give it another try tonight, I think.
It's like I say, it's funny because I mean, I've watched films and I've not liked them the first time, but then watched them again and then have enjoyed them. So,
what would be another example of that? Just thought that, you know, really quickly that you've seen and didn't like it first, but then I'm curious about that now.
Off the top of my head, I can't remember, but I know there's been a couple of movies. It's on the tip of my tongue and I can't think of it. I do remember, this is a really weird one, but I do remember that with Heroes. I tried watching Heroes, the TV series. The first time, didn't get it. Second time, didn't get it. But then I put it on a third time and then I actually fell in love with the whole thing. but movie-wise, off the top of my head, I can't remember the movie-wise.
What about you, Yoda? Anything you saw was like, meh, and then later on, really started to like it?
I'm sure there is, but I'd have to think about it. I know that there's been some movies that I probably didn't like when I was young or didn't understand. Not too often though. I mean, even when I was real young, like I liked things like Empire of the Sun, you know, that I really got, first time around. So, you know, it's difficult for me to pick out something like that. It was probably, you know, Bubble Boy or some bullshit like that, you know. It's something that's like,
how could you not like Bubble Boy the first time around? I mean, what's wrong with you?
Ghostbusters 2016, I really hated the first time around. But after additional viewings, I found that I really despised it. So
it's weird because just this is kind of off topic a bit, but I don't drink alcohol because I just don't like it. Never developed a taste for it.
It's okay. I'll drink for both of you.
There you go. And I remember going out with a friend many years ago and he said, "Do you want a pint?" I said, no, I'm fine. I'll just have a lemonade or whatever. And he said, no. He says, you know, you got to try it. So he bought me a pint and I sort of took the whole evening drinking it because I was just being polite. And I remember him saying to me, oh, it's like lager. The first time I had lager, didn't like it. But after a few pints, I do. And I thought, so by that rationale, you do that with dog sick. First time, not really a fan. But after I've had it for three or four times, do you know what? It's not bad. You know, but then, funny enough, with movies, like I say, I have done that. I've watched movies on a second or third viewing and then actually quite enjoyed them, even though I can't think of one off the top of my head.
You know, it took me that long. It took me 50 years before I finally started developing a taste for coffee. So I get where you're coming from.
That's just an age thing,
isn't it?
Coffee.
That's
more of a necessity than anything else, isn't it?
Yeah, now it's like, just put it in my vein.
Instead of coffee, I just Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola. I mean, I would drink, I have to limit myself to like two cans a day, or I would drink the 2 liter just all day, you know.
Yeah, especially since there's nobody watching, so just talk about whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, that's what...
So where you guys recommend getting your underwear from? I need a new pair.
You guys wear underwear? All right, Mr. Fancy Pants.
Yeah. Amando, okay, buddy.
Another interesting story, actually, that we could quite quickly discuss, just looking through some of the other ones, is that story about the Bohemian Rhapsody, the writer, Anthony McCartan. Is basically suing 20th Century Fox and the company that produced the movie. Now, this was quite interesting because I wrote it up and I found it, and it's quite interesting that he got paid up front in fees for writing the movie. Well, yeah. No, but the movie made $900 million. Okay, so, you know, knocking on $1 billion. It cost $50 million.
I didn't either. It was that popular.
That's what a few people said.
I mean, it was okay. It was a good movie. It did not seem like a $1 billion movie to me.
But that's what it made in the box office. Apparently, it cost about $50 million to make it. So that's profits of roughly, you know, $850-900 million. But apparently,
let's say $800 million, because you know there'd been another $50 million. Whatever the production budget is, double it for marketing.
Well, that's the thing is, okay, say it's $800 million. Apparently, the writer never received any of the net grossings because apparently, according to the accountants, the movie didn't make any money at all.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that Hollywood is full of a bunch of cheating, lying pieces of crap, some criminals that will eat you out of all your money?
At the end of January... I've just done my bookkeeping and my taxing and everything else, and I'm not putting my hand up here, but I may have been a bit wrong on sort of like a trip to the post office, which I haven't accounted for, you know, which is sort of 40 pence or something or other out of my tax return and so forth. But a budget deficit of like $800 million.
Did they check the sofa cushions?
You know, I read something back around. It was about the time the Hobbit trilogy was coming out, and I'd read something on some movie website, and it said that the studio claimed that they were still in the red over the first three Lord of the Rings through, you know, Hollywood's creative accounting, and I was like, that's
proper clever accounting, that is. You know, I mean, like I say, saving 100 quid here and there on your tax and everything else is one thing, but somehow losing $800 million.
George, I just find it unbelievable that a industry that is full of pedophiles, rapists, would cheat people like this. I can't understand how this could happen. It doesn't make any sense to me.
I thought it was weird.
I mean, they lecture us all the time about the right thing to do.
It's called projection.
And pay our fair share and all this sort of thing. So clearly nobody would, you know, stand up there and pretend to have the moral high ground.
No.
I know that I fly around in my private jet, but if you switch from plastic straws to paper ones, the Earth's going to be safe.
Yes. So I can continue to fly around in my private jet looking down on you peons.
Yeah.
Well, they got to do those things, though. You know, like they go up there and save the world, so it's okay for the it's an indulgence. But if we do it every day, like going to work or something, that's when it's wrong.
Oh yeah.
Saving the world with movies, which
now you've said
for
that,
a year and a half.
Now you've said that, I understand.
Yeah, so make the sacrifice. Eat the bug and drink the soy milk.
That's right.
One of the other ones we can quickly talk about is well, there's two there. Do we want to talk about the Under Siege reboot or Fyed being cast for no Fyed Feud being cast for June 2?
flip a coin.
That's a pass on both.
It's a hard no on either one.
I mean, again, Under Siege reboot. It's not necessary. That movie works perfectly well as it is, as an 80s movie. All the formula for that works in every respect, from Erica Reliniak looking gorgeous to Gary Busey looking gorgeous to Tommy Lee Jones and everything else. I mean,
wait a minute. We got to address that. When you say Gary Busey looking gorgeous, do you mean when he's in his uniform or when he's in drag for the, you know, at the start during the party? Which one of those did you prefer?
Sorry, I'm losing you now. I can't quite hear what you're saying.
I maintain that Busey did not know he was in a movie.
Yeah.
They just turned on the camera and said, do your thing. And he puts on a dress and he puts on a... I'm going to put on a naval uniform. Now I'm going to put on a dress. Is my knit stick good?
But again, it's one of those movies that doesn't need a remake or a reboot or a re-anything. It was perfect of that 80s era. There's no... I don't know how they're going to do it. Let me tell you
how they're going to do it. Let me spoil it for you. It's going to be some Trump voting white supremacists are going to take over an aircraft carrier, and they're going to use it to shoot nuclear missiles at abortion rights. So they will require Barack Obama, played by Will Smith.
Wait. Did you say they're going to shoot missiles at abortion rights?
Yes.
How do you?
Don't. Exactly. It's just a movie. What? Don't think about it.
My brain is coming out my nostrils.
Should I go on?
If you said abortion clinics, I would have been with you.
They could reveal
the clinics at the rights.
That's right.
I really kind of want to see this now.
You do away with the rights, then the abortion clinics are irrelevant. They can rebuild an abortion clinic. You killed the rights. Yeah, so Will Smith Barack Obama played by Will Smith will be an ensign's mate, swabby on the poop deck. And of course, I got to stop.
That's always my favorite joke.
If you keep talking.
That's always my favorite joke from Family Guy. Whenever he talks about boats, when he says, do you need some semen on your poop deck? That never fails to amuse me because I'm very childish.
Because we're juvenile, yes. I understand.
Yeah, I get it. I did say it after all, so clearly I get it.
Clearly.
So let's move on to then. This is going to be interesting now because we're going to talk about Ghostbusters Afterlife. So, Sean, if me and you just want to sort of go shopping for underwear, Yoda can talk to the camera because neither of us have seen it. I've been quite firmly in the place of I'm not bothered. When it comes out on streaming, I will eventually get around to it, but I'm not bothered about it. But Yoda, you've and Sean, you're the same as well. You've just not seen it, have you?
No, I started to watch it on a certain kind of website, but it failed on me about barely past the opening credits. So I tried. So
was it because it was in Mandarin?
No, it was there was a lot of I think it was Thai
symbols or something. I was gonna say I know they did the accent then, and I suddenly thought better of it.
We do not condone any of this, by the way. I disavow both of these assholes.
If I'm gonna do accents, stick to the British ones. I can get away with them. So Yoda, you have seen it now. You've written a review, but just sort of give us an overview of Ghostbusters Afterlife.
So should I say spoilers? Do you guys care?
I'm not bothered.
Okay. No. And those of you listening or watching, I'll get into some detail, which I did not do on my review. The 10,000 foot view is, God, it's really trying. And unfortunately, it's a little dull to get there. And that's not, I guess I'm kind of, I mean, it's respectful. Sometimes maybe a little too respectful. But I mean, I would rather, I will take this over Ghostbusters 2016 any day of the week. It's earnest.
I would take a heart attack over 2016.
Yeah.
2016.
Yeah. What you, that's the, look, if you watch 2016, George, there's no need to choose. You'll get a heart attack.
But I mean, that's kind of not comparing it to anything. To sort of say it's better than the 2016. Like I say, that's, you know, like I say, doesn't give us any frame of reference.
Yeah,
every movie ever made is better than.
It's true. I mean, I don't think it's. You know, it pains me to somewhat pan it, and it's not a terrible movie. It just a little trimming here and there, and it probably would have been a lot better. It starts out with we don't know who it is, but it's Egon, who is running. He's driving a car in the dark from a place back to his wonderfully creepy farmhouse, and he gets there and he holds a trap and something is coming through, and then he hits something which starts up a bunch of capacitors, but it fails, and then he runs into the house and the arms come out of the chair, and then he passes away, heart attack, natural causes. So his daughter, his estranged daughter, who hasn't seen him in quite a while, played by Carrie Coon, she, you know, is left the estate, and she's not doing so well herself. She's got her two kids, Phoebe and Finn Wolfhard, which is what I'll call him because I don't remember his name. And
big impression, right?
Yeah, Phoebe is great. McKenna Grace plays her great, and she plays her like you might expect Egon's granddaughter to be like. Not a carbon copy, but. You know, that same too smart, doesn't understand people kind of person.
A loving granddaughter.
Well, not, I mean, she has trouble expressing herself. I mean, if this was a serious movie, you'd probably call her somewhat autistic or something. But she tries, and she does love her mother, but she's not given to a lot of sappy emotional moments, which I kind of appreciated. So she's like when her mom says, you know, what are you doing in here? She's like, it's science, mom. It's over your head. You should stick to things that you're good at, like fajitas. And she's like, oh, great. It's like, no, your fajitas are excellent. You know, so it's just kind of like that little moment. And she just throws in there to show that she does care, but she just doesn't know how to express herself. And it works. It's one of those things. It's really it makes it the most enjoyable part of the movie when she's on the screen. It's fun, and unfortunately, her mom is okay, but she kind of Carrie Coon has a trouble vacillating between crappy mom and caring mom with problems, for lack of a better term. So she, you know, you're supposed to be somewhat sympathetic to her, but then sometimes she can be a little bit. I don't know. A little bit abrasive, and so it's kind of hard to really connect with her character sometimes. She's almost got it, but she just it's a little uneven. Paul Rudd plays Paul Rudd like he does in all his movies.
As expected,
he's fine. There's nothing wrong with him. He's playing Paul Rudd.
Don't ever go with the world's sexiest man.
Yeah. Call me Paul.
Jealous.
Yes. Yes. What? The guy is older than me, and he looks younger than me. I hate it.
I don't think he's aged since I watched Clueless fairly recently.
Yeah,
and he's not aged since Clueless, which was like 1996 odd or something or other.
Yeah, there's a meme going around. It says all the Avengers. In 30 years, and it shows, you know, like they've aged up the actors and everything, except for Paul Rudd, he looks exactly the same. So, but you know, it's so they go out to this town in Oklahoma, that apparently was created by Ivo Shandor for mining, and that's where he got all the weird metals for the building in New York. And what Egon has been doing, he's been kind of keeping guard over this hell pit that's there, and he's got all these he's got four proton packs set up pointing into the pit. And so every so often there's earthquakes. And the reason why there's earthquakes, because the pit starts engorging all this death. And then when it hits a certain level, the PKE meter goes off, which automatically sets off the proton packs, which zaps them all back down. And that's how he's keeping, you know, Gozer at bay. And when he dies and Phoebe, you know, starts looking into all this, she, you know, she realizes, oh, her dad's a Ghostbuster. They accidentally let a ghost out of a trap that he had, that he had hidden.
Wait a minute. How did they not know that he was one of the, because this is in the same universe. How the hell would they not have heard of these four guys?
So is there an explanation? Well, people did hear of these four guys, but it's mostly like Paul Rudd's kind of a fanboy, and it is on YouTube and everything. But after 89, everybody kind of forgot. And I won't say that they like totally forgot. Like people know about it, but it's like one of those things like, you remember that back in the 80s? Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, like if you pick some historical event in the 80s that was kind of big at the time, but then it kind of went away, and you don't really think about it anymore.
Yeah, but proof of life after death. I mean, would that really be something that people be like, oh, yeah, remember that time?
Look,
I'm
trying here, okay, goddamn.
I know, I'm not saying that this isn't your fault. I just, the movie, you know.
Yoda, why did you spoil Ghostbusters?
You ruined it for me.
This is all your fault.
I'm sorry.
I get Sean's viewpoint of that, though. Like I say, that if like I say, if somebody had found a way to capture and harness ghosts, look, and then it's only like 20 years later and everybody's going, did they? Yeah, it was like on the news. It was like, don't you remember New York almost got blown up at the giant marshmallow man?
Guys, have you not been living in the last year and a half? Okay, we got a kid here that is on, I don't know how many videos, clearly defending himself against three white men. And yet they're telling us that he killed three black men and murdered them because he was a crazy psycho. Even though everybody, and half the people believe this. So, yeah, I could kind of believe that people would either forget or what, you know, the media can screw you over and get half the people to believe anything or stop believing anything.
And just 10 minutes ago, he was complaining about my shooting missiles at abortion rights.
There you go.
I was going to say, I zoned out for a little while. Carl Rittenhouse is in this new movie.
Sure, why not?
Yes, he's the main bad guy, obviously.
Yes. He plays Gozer. The flat top looks fantastic on him.
Sorry.
So
please get back to it.
Yeah, you know, see, this is what happens. I'll be honest with you. You get about this far in the movie, you start meandering and start talking about anything else. I mean, that's the problem. She does meet a friend. He calls himself Podcast because he likes to podcast.
Very clever.
And
it's an American audience. They need stuff
American
like that.
Audience, yeah. But he's kind of fun. He's very enthusiastic, like Ray would have been. And then her brother and a girl that he met. That's kind of like the four, but the other two, I mean, the brother and this girl that he met, they barely register. You know, it's not a very strong character dynamic. The plot is fine. They got to stop what they accidentally let loose. And at the end, for no reason at all, she makes a call from, okay, so they get the okay, here I go again. I'm sorry. I do this. Rambling man.
Remember to breathe.
Brain gets ahead of myself. They find the car in the barn. They get it fixed up, and they go after this ghost that likes to eat metal for some reason. So they go after it in town, and that's probably what you've seen in the trailers where they're chasing it with the little four-wheel trap in front of them.
Oh,
and
yeah,
It was kind of fun. And they get the thing, but then they get put in jail because they pretty much tore up the town doing it. And so Phoebe, for one phone call, calls the Ghostbusters number from the commercial way back in the day. We're ready to believe you. Yeah. And that rings up Ray Stantz's occult bookstore. And he answers the phone and he talks to her and tells her why he's so pissed at Egon and what Egon did, which was basically just steal all the stuff and go out to a town. And for some reason, the other Ghostbusters didn't believe Egon that this was happening. I can't imagine they wouldn't. He always had the answer. So why would they just assume that he was lost his mind? And then,
maybe they were all angry at Bill Murray for not coming back for the third one.
I am.
Yeah, you would think they'd be more pissed at. Well, I know Bill Murray and Harold Ramis had a pretty big falling out for a while. I think it was from Groundhog Day or something. But
okay.
So they, in the meantime, the Keymaster and the Gatekeeper take over. Paul Rudd and the mother, and they go and do what the Keymaster and the Gatekeeper do, and then let loose Gozer. And yeah, they boned. Okay, do I have to be that? Yeah, fine.
Oh, okay. No, I just never learned about that from English textbooks.
Clearly. So I'm just going to.
I'm arriving, and I'm here.
We're just going to go anyway, to my camera for a while, kids. So they get there. They are able to trap. They stuck one of the traps. They maneuvered the remote control wheel trap underneath one of the dogs because now they've turned into the dogs like they did the first movie. And they suck the spirit out of the mother. And she turns back into human. And then half a Gozer kind of goes away. Now it turns kind of like a skeleton kind of thing. I actually kind of liked it. It was kind of a clever idea. So they take the trap and they run back. And now you're like at the first movie where they have the trap and they hold it out. And Gozer comes through the trees. And they've got the capacity. Just like everything's set up just like before. And then, for no reason at all, the Venkman, Winston, and Stan show up to help them take out Gozer. Why did they show up? Because the fans wanted it. That's why. there's no reason within the movie that this should have happened. Was I unhappy about this? Not in the slightest. The ending is fun, and then. Phoebe, she's the last one fighting Gozer, and then Egon's ghost comes and kind of helps her steady the proton stream and gives her some extra strength. And they did some sort of deep fake, but because he's a transparent ghost, it looks spot on perfect. He doesn't say a word, just facial expressions, and gets to reconcile with the original Ghostbusters. He gets to reconcile with his daughter and meet his grandkids, and then, you know, goes off into the
hell.
Ether or whatever. and it was nice. It was very classy how they brought him back into it without
exploiting it.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I tell you, I would have given the movie a 12 stars out of 5 if when it was all done and he looked at him and they were like, well, you guys, it's good to see you. But you know the drill. You suck!
That would have been great.
Stuck him into the trap. Hey, you know, it's the job, man. It's the job.
You know what?
That
would have made it. That would have made a brilliant sequel if they still had like this ghost jail that they had, and then Egon going into that, and all these ghosts going, it's you.
It's you, son of a bitch.
Let the cop going into general population prison.
I would have given it 100% star rating if they had actually done that. That would have been so dark. But they went the happy route, and I don't blame them. There are a couple of mid credit and post credit. The mid credit scene brings back Sigourney Weaver for a quickie with Venkman. Apparently, they're still together, which is nice. And she's doing the thing with the cards and the shock machine, but she's doing it to Venkman. Venkman keeps getting them all right. Correct.
Oh yeah, that's
good.
Since
you mark the cards, he's like, no, and she shocks him. He goes, okay, I shock the cards, and she shocks him again.
I'm surprised that they didn't make one the Sigourney Weaver's baby from part two part of into this as one of the young ones, but I guess it would have been too old considering the kids are all what, like early
teens.
Been
at least 32. Yeah. I would say that this is fine what they did, it's like I said, I think they were really trying hard, and I gotta give their movie respect for that. They were trying to give the fans what they wanted. They were trying to do something a little different, even though in essence this is the first Ghostbusters movie. I mean, it's Gozer, Keymaster, the Stay Puff Marshmallow Man, and a little tiny things. It's all fine. It's just not quite what I mean. How do you remake something that is an absolute classic, or even try to live up to an absolute classic like that?
Well,
it almost sounds like a genre change, because, like I said last week, the first movie is like an adult, very subtle sarcasm through the whole film.
Smoking.
And then this one sounds like a kids movie.
Well, I would say it's definitely a PG-13, and it has a Stranger Things 80s kids vibe to it.
It's a big thing at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah,
that kind of Stranger Things thing.
Yeah, I think it's the pacing and the and just some of the things were just, my wife was going, that's kind of boring, but she did love the end. But she did say, it's kind of boring. And I can't disagree with her. It takes time to get itself going and to get all the pieces in place. And some of it is just a little unnecessary, I think. I did not care at all about you could have cut the brother out of the whole movie. And his relationship with the girl that he met at this, it adds a little texture, but it really does nothing. And you just like get on with it,
Maybe he's probably just there because he's in such Stranger Things. And,
yeah,
because
he's Finn Wolfhard,
Yeah,
that's, I was thinking it's exactly the same as Millie Bobby Brown was in the King Kong versus Godzilla.
Yeah.
And her character did nothing for the story at all, but because she's in Stranger Things, she was in this film type of thing. That's literally the only reason they've been cast.
I don't think you're wrong there. And I think that, but again, it's I really hate to just crap on the movie, because I feel like its heart is in the right place. It's trying. It respects the property. It respects the fans. And yeah, it does have a lot of fan service. It does have a lot of Easter eggs running around in it. And it clearly has a love for this property. But it's a problem when the people who have such reverence for the property give it more. This is so difficult because you could say that Rian Johnson had no reverence for the property, but he completely disrespected it, right?
Mm.
Star Wars. And then you've got things like, like Nicholas Meyer had no idea what Star Trek was when he did Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. He didn't have any reverence for it, but he had respect for it. And he created the best Star Trek movie there was, right? So, I don't know what the magic formula is here. I certainly don't want Paul Feig or whatever his name is, the guy
Fiage.
Fiage. Paul Faggy. I don't want him doing Ghostbusters 2016 because clearly he didn't respect the property. And I don't necessarily, I mean, Ivan Reitman's, what's his name?
Jason, is it?
Jason Reitman, yeah. He clearly had, you know, he was on the set when he was a kid. He clearly has a lot of respect and reverence and, you know, from a kid's point of view that grew up with it, you know, just like we were kids when we saw it, right? So we would make it, if I made Ghostbusters, I would do the same thing. I would be far too reverential of the property. But the thing is with Ghostbusters is that it was all about irreverence. That was what was so awesome about it. It treated the ghosts seriously, but not the protagonists. Yeah.
That's the problem with any kind of remake, is that you can, or not even a remake, but a sequel with new characters, is you just can't do that. They try to turn it into something ill, even though they mean well. And so it in a way, you have to pull off a little bit of a miracle. Like the sequel to Alien is Aliens, of course, but it's more or less kind of a genre shift. You know, we go from basically a slasher horror movie in space to an action movie. And I think that's the only way to do it, if it can even be done. I don't think it can be done successfully because, you know, the original is a perfect movie that it had no business having a sequel.
And I think part of it is that there is a time window when you can do sequels. Like, say what you will about Ghostbusters 2. And I don't hate it or anything. I don't think it's as good as the first one, but it certainly had the correct tone.
Mm-hmm.
And it did not treat the first one like this reverential thing, right? But when you get 30 years out, where this thing has just seeped into the public consciousness, and generations now have introduced this, and when you see it as a kid and you still love it as an adult, you tend to place these properties on a pedestal that they weren't on when you first had the first sequel, right? Yeah. So, yeah. I gotta wonder sometimes, maybe, you know, what they just. There comes a point where it's too much time has passed, and people see this as too much of a special thing now, and you can't replicate that without. I mean, it just would take such a special way to do it, and you either completely F it up like you did with Ghostbusters 2016, where you just stick a middle finger up in the air to the fans. Or you do something like this where you're really trying hard, but you're too respectful of it. And I hate to get mad at this sort of thing, because I feel like here's a guy who's trying so damn hard. It's clear he's trying so damn hard to put out something that he hopes the fans will like. And I want to like it more, and it wants me to like it more than I did. And I feel feel bad about that?
I know exactly what you're saying. It's okay. You know, he gave it a hell of a good shot, and the movie's just fine. But there's just some things you can't do, and he gave it his best shot. It's okay, you know.
I think it's one of those things that, I mean, hearing both of you talk, that with any kind of sequel, it's got to be done with that loving respect and everything else, but you're also aiming at a group of people who remember the original. You know, we're that right age that we were kids and we all had proton packs and we played with the toys and we grew up with it. But then it's gone so far out of their memory, but like you say, they love them so much, but then they're trying to introduce their kids to it. And so I can imagine parents taking their kids to see it, saying, oh, you're going to love it, it's going to be great, and everything else, and then seeing it and sort of going, it's not as good as the original, we should have just stayed home and watched that sort of thing.
There is that piece of it, but it's kind of like, I don't know. I mean, you can't just review a movie in like, okay, here's a movie, I saw it, and that's it. It's not in a vacuum. Ghostbusters has a place in our cultural zeitgeist, right? And so that seeps into the making of the movie. And then there's no doubt in my mind that if 2016 hadn't happened, then this probably wouldn't have happened. Or maybe it would have been made completely differently, because there's no doubt in my mind that the backlash of Ghostbusters 2016.
Yeah, no doubt.
There's a response they knew. To this. Yeah.
They just about killed it, and they know. So they were like, we gotta fix this.
But then conversely, it's kind of, do they need to fix it at all? Just leave it alone.
Well, again, I mean, they got
Hollywood execs who are just sort of...
They got to make amends for what they did in 2016. Not fix... they're not fixing the first... No. They're just saying, like, oh, we might have hurt our bottom dollar. You know, in a way, when you were talking about too much time passing, it got me thinking about the first Sin City movie. I don't know if you guys liked it, but it's and then...
All right.
At the time, it was... kind of a
interesting, you know, it's I don't think it holds
I remember
up.
Liking it,
and then 10 years later they do the sequel, and nobody went and saw it, and it's like 10 years you waited 10 years. By that time, that whole, you know, shot for shot comic book panel thing had been done. Later on, you know, 300 basically did it. And
well, they did a sequel to 300 too, and nobody gave a crap about that either.
Yeah. There was quite a distance between those two, though. There was quite a few years between those as well.
Like seven or eight years.
Yeah.
It's just too long. Some things you can get away with alone, but I don't think.
I'm gonna throw in a curveball here then, because I'm going to say that the two films that spring particularly to my mind is Mad Max Fury Road and Blade Runner 2049. Because I'm particularly going to mention Mad Max because I've said this before. I remember being in the cinema and watching a trailer and thinking, ugh, Mad Max movie, really? Like 30 years after the original, what's the point? And a mate went to see it and he said, you've got to come and see this. You've got to come to the cinema and watch it. And I was like, right, fine. And it's such a good movie. But I think you still got that loving tribute to Mad Max, whether he plays Max in this or whatever it is. Nobody's still 100% sure. But what you got out of Mad Max, I found was just a great movie. You kind of didn't even need to see Mad Max to appreciate how great Fury Road was.
I liked Fury Road when I saw it in the theater, but on a second and third watch, I've thought lesser of it every time.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. No. It's got better for me every time I watch it. I just think it's hard. But, I mean, okay, that's fair enough and everything else. But what I'm saying is sometimes the formula does work, that you give it enough time, like I say with Blade Runner as well, because I thought Blade Runner was done brilliantly well. 2049, it was really, really the same tone and everything about it was so spot on. But again, it's because you had a great director making a great film. And so didn't we do a story recently that they're bringing up a new Garfield, a new live? Oh, that's right, because what's his name? Chris Pratt's voice in Garfield, didn't
he? Oh, thank God. A new Garfield. just what we've all been waiting on.
But again, you see, it's funny because that's the expression, but that film might actually be one of the best films of the year. I'm not saying it is. You know,
no, I'm going to put money down that it won't be.
I don't know. That's a pretty big risk. Maybe you should invest in something like Ethereum or something instead. I don't know.
But with it, again, Garfield is one of those properties that it's too old, you know, to make a big impact on the modern kids and stuff. You know, Garfield's had his time. He was funny back in the 80s. And, I mean, both the movies kind of flopped. None of them did anything particularly well out of it. And so, again, it's kind of just one of those, it's Hollywood just sort of going, oh, we've got a new animation. It's Garfield, you know, and...
No, I get you. I'm, you know, one thing I said about Dune was that it felt like an adult made it.
Yes.
And Denis Villeneuve also did the Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
Jason Reitman, who's made some decent movies. I'm not trying to downplay him or anything, but I think a lot of these people that make some of these remakes see the property from a child's perspective. You know, I see the property from a child's perspective sometimes. You know, I watching Ghostbusters, as much as I love it as an adult, you know, there are parts of me that go back to when I was 14. Right. Mm-hmm. And same with Star Wars. You know, I'm 7 years old. I'm watching Star Wars again. When, you know, if I really let myself go into it, and you have that impression, that first impression that's set when you're a child. So I gotta wonder if that maybe seeps into some of these remakes that we're talking about that needs to not, because adults made those movies, not children.
Yeah.
And now we have the children that watch those movies trying to remake them again. And they have to let that part of them go maybe a little bit. Now, again, you let it go too much and you end up with a Rian Johnson or a Paul Feig making Ghostbusters 2016 or Last Jedi, right? So, I mean, yeah. It's a delicate balance. It's a magic formula that there is no way to properly, either they do it right or it just doesn't quite work. This one maybe mostly worked, but was slow.
Maybe the answer is to get somebody that's not like,
uh-oh, we lost him.
I thought it was me.
Am I gone?
You're back. Yep,
nope.
Me? Say it again. Say it again.
Me?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the question might be, you got to, like you said, you got to get somebody that's not real, that was not a fan, but respects the property. So
Nicholas Meyer, right?
But conversely, I would say on the other side of the coin to that is that, in this day and age, a Hollywood just making movies for those blue ticks and for those screaming people and everything else. Back in the day, back in the 80s, with a lot of movies were just made. You know, I find this funny. I'm going to make it. Here you go. If you like it, great. If you don't, that's it. And it wasn't made for an audience. It wasn't made for, you know, teenage boys between the ages of you know, 13 and 18 and all this kind of stuff. It was just a movie that... The marketing, it seems now in Hollywood, they don't green light something unless it's going to make money. And I know Hollywood has always been about making money, but back in the day, they just used to sort of, it wasn't so analytical about everything.
Yeah, I think you got a point there. I mean, I don't know. I think, like when you said, it's like, well, they shouldn't make Ghostbusters. And my reply would be, but money. And yeah. That's the problem, is that that's why sequels get made, and that will always happen. I mean, they're going to, if a movie is unexpectedly successful, there's going to be sequels because they can make money out of that. That's fine. That's the business. Maybe if you're lucky, you get a better movie out of it, or you get a better sequel. But if not, so what? We got the first one, and it was fun, and if we get a second one that we halfway enjoy, I can live with that. But now we're into this weird era of remakes of shit from decades ago, right?
Yeah.
And not just like there were times where they would make, okay, so like Ocean's 11, that was a remake, right? But yeah. Nobody had heard of Ocean's 11, or very few. No. It was not a successful movie. It was not a particularly good movie. But he took that and he made it into its own new franchise that stands apart. Okay, fine. But you wouldn't remake Gone with the Frickin' Wind, you know? You don't need to. It's perfect as it is. You don't need to remake that. Somebody will at some point. But
no, I'm still
waiting for Citizen Kane 2.
I was thinking about writing that son of Citizen Kane. I've actually got a screenplay. It's 240 pages. Would you guys care if I read it to you real quick?
Is it pretty much 240 pages of the Son of Citizen Kane fucking up a room? Because I'd watch that.
Egon.
It's about sledding.
But I mean, you guys get my point. I mean, it's one thing to remake something that maybe failed the first time, but had the kernel of something interesting in it, and them, you know, challenging themselves to mine.
Dread 3D is a good example of that. A good idea that wasn't executed.
Stallone, Judge Dredd, and then the Dredd that came out.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. But instead, they are remaking stuff that was all, you know, remaking Ghostbusters, remaking, you know, a lot of this kind of stuff. I just don't understand. You know, it's like they've either got nothing. They've got no way of coming up with new ideas, or they're just, it's so expensive that they can't take a chance on anything. It's very difficult to, it's very difficult for me to understand. So, you know, we end up talking about this stuff, properties that mean a lot to us, but, and they keep remaking them. Some of it's done with respect and love and just doesn't work, like Ghostbusters Afterlife. Some of it's done with a big middle finger, like Ghostbusters 2016.
And again, it kind of depends on who they get in to make it ultimately, because it's one of those things that, like I say, some people, like you say, don't know about the property, but they have the respect for it. But then other people just seem to come in and you don't know who they are or what they are or what on earth they're going to do with it, type of thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, we're not going to solve it here. I guess my
no
my
we're
final
stay
thing
here until we do.
Oh, damn.
And I got to get my screenplay to read. So,
Okay, yeah,
I'm gonna need to get some liquor. Lots and lots of liquor.
I don't drink, but I'll join you.
Yeah. Well, if I can drink it fast enough, I'll be under the table, and it won't matter how long you guys talk. So
I should say here, I've got about 9 minutes of battery life left on this. So, in fact, it's telling me right now that it's going to have to close on me if I don't charge it, and I don't have it plugged in. So I'm going to have to dip out on you guys.
That's fine. Okay. I think my final thing is I would encourage people to see it for no other reason than to support something, to stick it in the eye as a backlash for 2016.
Yeah.
To show them that this is the stuff we like. Please give us more of this, but try to be better at it. And so I don't know. We'll see how the box office turns out. I haven't looked. Is it worth a damn? I don't know how well it's done.
I'm about to lose you guys, so I'll see you guys next week.
All right. Take care.
Bye, Sean.
See
you. Bye. I think it turned over something like it hit 40 million. I think it's kind of on track as far as I heard.
Well, let me take a look.
I'm sure I read it was about 40 mil they took.
44 million. That's not bad. That's not insane.
I mean, you said you went to see it and the cinema was packed, and that was for a matinee.
Yeah, it was like at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And it wasn't a big theater. It was one of those that had the fork and screen or, you know, get food. Mm. And so they had the tables or the counter in front of you, and they had bigger seats. So there wasn't as many people in there. But even so, it's been a while since I've seen any movie that's been that full. So,
actually, that's true. I mean, I've only been a couple of times, but yeah, I think the last one I went to see, it couldn't have been more than 20 people in there. And it was like a 200 or 300 seat cinema in Arlo. So,
Nobody went to Shang-Chi. Nobody went to the Eternals.
I'll tell you what, we could talk about Shang-Chi quickly if you want to, because I caught it on streaming. Now, you quite liked it, didn't you?
I liked it enough. Yeah. I mean, I didn't hate it. I thought it was kind of, I kind of like that it went, you know, kind of bonkers with a lot of stuff, you know, dragons and bizarre crap in a weird fairyland world or whatever they were.
That's exactly what I got out of it. I felt the action would have been better with a better director. I grew up on the early Jackie Chans and kind of those far away, do all the scenes in one shot type of thing. So I'm a big fan of that. And I thought that the stunt guys were great, but I didn't think it was shot particularly well. And the whole CG and everything really started to grind on me after a while. The third act, I don't think there was anything real in there at all, apart from the actors.
No, it was complete, you know, blue screen insanity. I don't know. I kind of like what they did with the Mandarin. Like, he's like, oh, they named me after an orange, you know? What the hell?
I really liked the Mandarin in Iron Man 3. I thought he was great. I loved it that he
was
from Manchester.
I'd
never read the comic books. And so with the comic books, I appreciate people were peed off because of what they did to him. I thought he was great. In this, I felt it was kind of like a whole comic relief in the second act, which just wasn't needed. And I didn't
Well, and I'm talking about the real man, not Trevor. I mean, Trevor is fine in this. He, you know, bringing Ben Kingsley back was a nice surprise. And he was fine. He was funny, a little too much at times, I agree.
Yeah.
But the real guy, the guy that had the 10 rings, that was the true Mandarin, although that wasn't what he called himself.
I didn't realize that. I didn't get that from the story.
Well, you remember he was telling the whole story. He's like, so this guy, you know, they take my information, and then they call themselves the Mandarin, like I'm a big orange, you know?
Right, okay.
But he's the actual guy. That's why he had Trevor, because he was a little pissed at him. And I don't know. I like the idea that he's a guy that's kind of like, you know, I've lived forever, I've done all these things, and I don't have anything. And he wanted to be a family man again, and he'd given up his stuff, and then things went south, and he had to go on revenge.
That was a nice change.
Yeah,
that was.
He wasn't, I want to take over the world because I'm a villain and I'm a bad guy. He had some depth, and I appreciated that. Thought he'd be a little bit smarter than to say, oh, wow, my wife's behind this wall. And it's evil. Yeah. There's things coming out of it that are dissolving people into nothing. Maybe somebody is, you know, a guy that's been around that long, you think he might pick up a signal or two that he might be getting, you know.
I was a little bit annoyed with the advertising department, because I think it was quite a few weeks ago, I had a background of the 10 rings, and some were blue and some were orange. And all the way through the film, the bad guy has got his 10 rings. They're always in blue, I think it was. And I just kept thinking, well, this is, you know, when the other guy gets them, they're going to turn the other color, which, you know, they sort of made a big deal about with all the special effects, but that didn't obviously come as much as a surprise, because it was quite obviously being laid out that way. So I was a little disappointed.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a passable, enjoyable couple of hours. You know, that it's not the top, anywhere near the top of any Marvel movies, I didn't hate it.
The other thing is I cannot stand Afwekerson. That his Chinese friend, Awkwafina,
named after a water bottle.
The whole ending, when as soon as she picks up the bow, I thought to myself, she's going to do the killer shot. Because that was so obvious that was going to happen, but
I was honestly not as irritated by her as I expected to be. Maybe I had such low, because I don't like her either, so I expected to really hate her, and so I was kind of pleasantly surprised. I was pleasantly surprised I didn't hate her. Look, if she wasn't in the movie, would it be fine? Yes. I would not cry any tears if she was removed completely from the movie. But I thought I would hate her, and I didn't. So I guess that's, I guess that's a big win, right? Drunken Yoda didn't completely hate you.
We've actually had some people join late. Hello, people. Robert Peach says, interesting discussion. Didn't like the trailer for Afterlife. Probably will not see it. And he said it was $60 million that it hit. Again,
Box Office Mojo says $44 million, so I don't know. I mean, it could change. Worldwide, maybe. I don't know.
It's done well. But I mean, I'm the same as Robert, that I saw the ad and the trailers for it, and I just, you know, I will eventually get around to seeing it, but I'm just not in a hurry. Immediately when it comes up to a reboot, remake or whatever it is, my brain automatically goes and so sometimes I'm pleasantly surprised, but most of the time my brain was right.
I don't disagree. I mean, you're getting to the point now, you're just like, I don't want to see anything I've seen before.
I mean, funny enough, I've been watching, after last month I had a whole run of horror, so I've been doing westerns this month, and I've been watching quite a few westerns I've never seen before, and some of them have been absolutely fantastic. The Professionals I watched the other day, which is Lee Marvin and I forget who else now, but they go across the border to rescue a rich man's wife, and it was fantastic. Absolutely loved it. But to me, it was new and original, and so I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it's that, to me, like I say, it doesn't matter what kind of movie it is, whether it's got all the CG in the world or anything, just give me something original. I think that was probably what I liked about Last Night in Soho. There's not much I can compare it to.
I'm gonna give it a try here this afternoon after we get off of this. So I'll let you know what I think. I'm looking forward to it. If nothing else, Edgar Wright. Even after the monsters started coming out of the mountain, he just kept going. You would have think he would have stopped and at least wondered what was going on. Yeah, exactly. It was an okay movie, but Awkwafina is terrible. I can't argue with your hatred of Awkwafina. I'm not a fan of hers, but
I don't understand how she's working. I really don't.
I guess it didn't bother me as bad as it is. Why did Wong come to get both of them when she has zero powers? You think it would be him and his sister? Because Awkwafina,
but the comedy factor.
Yeah. Well, how are they going to get Wong to do karaoke? So, who cares about dumb kids we know nothing about? Clearly a belated attempt to capture the Stranger Things vibe. I always kind of get my hackles up when people say, why would we care about these characters we know nothing about? Look, you didn't know anything about Stance, Venkman, or Egon when the movie first came out. Right? I mean, that's a movie's job, is to get you invested in the characters.
Yeah.
You're always getting introduced to new characters the first time you see them, right? So that's where the movie fails. I did care about Phoebe. I cared about McKenna Grace. I cared very little for any of the other characters in it. And that's the movie's failure, not because we tried to put in new characters. You should try to introduce new characters, and you should do it correctly. But if you're not doing it correctly, I didn't know anything about Dune, really. Not really. And I got introduced to Paul and all these characters within it, and I cared about them all as I went through it. Not having a single, past relationship with Dune, I never really got through the first one, and I couldn't tell you anything. I knew the characters like by their actor names, like Kyle MacLachlan is in it, but I didn't understand it. Now that I've seen it in a much better setup and much better done, now I understand, and I really like the characters. So I think it's the movie's job to do that.
That's the thing, is ultimately you've got to have characters you cared about. I watched a horror, but the other day, and the setup of the characters, couldn't care less about it. So the rest of the movie was pointless because they were going through all this, and I just kept thinking, I don't care. Whereas, like you say, even the guys from Ghostbusters, even it's obviously a comedy and a science fiction and everything else, but you care about them because you like them and you want to follow their story and you want to see how it plays out. And any movie has to do that.
I agree. I mean, like I saw Free Guy not that long ago, which I really enjoyed, the one with Ryan Reynolds. I enjoyed those characters. I enjoyed the girl, the guy, the Ryan Reynolds character, the blue shirt guy, as he was called. I knew what they were about, and I cared when the guy and the girl got together at the end. I'd never seen this movie before. These were all brand new characters to me. So, I mean, it can be done. It's just, how are you going to execute? And I think I want to be careful. It's like, we're doing new Ghostbusters, but it doesn't have Venkman, Stans, or Egon in it. Well, I'm out. Well, Blade Runner 2049 had almost completely new characters in it. It did have completely new characters in it for most of the movie. Yeah. And Harrison Ford just kind of comes in almost a cameo, right? And yet, I cared about Ryan Gosling's character. I cared about it. I cared about what happened in that movie. So, I mean, I don't buy this idea, if it doesn't have the characters you loved from the first movie, if it has to rely on the characters you love for the first movie, it's not doing its job.
Yeah. Hot take, I still prefer Lynch's Dune to the new one. See, in my opinion...
Blasphemy.
I really like Dune from 84. 84 or 86, whenever it was, the 84, is it? I really love that, but it needed an update with the visuals.
I kind of respect it more than I like it. I respect what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
And they definitely took it seriously, and they were trying to do some really interesting things with visuals, but it was too short for the source material. I can see that now after watching Dune Part 1. And
and
David Dune Lynch is just a little... Actually,
it's the first three pages of the books.
Yeah. We got parts 2 through 750 coming.
It's going to become, yeah.
Which like will one, be just one well, less than the Police Academy movies. the stakes are lower when you have kids, invariably. Yeah, that's not a bad point. It is true that you're not going to kill the kids. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. If you make it all with kids, it's going to have lower stakes. I do agree with that.
That is true, yeah. Unless they do make it dark. Like I said, that movie when we talked about the 31 Days of Horror, the movie called Who Could Kill a Child. That kind of changes, balances things a little bit out. If you get a chance to see that.
I have not. And I'll need to put it on my list when I'm really feeling irritated one day. You know, I've had it with work. I've had it with everything. I'm going to watch To Kill a Child, watch child murder and enjoy it.
Yeah, too short.
Awful person.
Have you seen the Spice Driver version of Lynch's Dune? Yes, I have seen the Spice Driver version, the longer version. I've been trying to find a copy of it to see it again, and I can't, because that does expand on the story quite a lot. And Anonymousu, if that's how you pronounce your name, the thing that annoyed me about the new Dune was where it ended. I remember sat there and it went dark, and I thought to myself, don't bring up the credits. And it did. And then that really annoyed me, because I was like, no, I want to see more of this. And I think they sort of did finish it in a good way to sort of set it up for part two. But I was quite, I was quite annoyed the way it finished.
Well, speaking of which, there is a post-credit scene, not a mid-credits, a post-credit scene. There's both. But the post-credit scene has Winston has apparently made himself a pretty successful businessman. And he's the one that makes sure that, because I was like, Ray's occult is still alive in New York. Well, apparently he's been paying the rent and taking care of Ray all these years to make sure the bookstore doesn't close, which is cool. Winston would do that. Winston would totally do that. And he's apparently kept the firehouse, although it's a bit in disrepair, and he's pulling in the Ecto-1 into the thing, and then they show the containment unit. It's got a red light flashing. So are there going to be sequels? Possibly.
I was going to say, yeah. It's funny, because a lot of movies do that these days, that they almost, in fact, I'm going to say, no, I won't. I was going to say something. This is not spoiling too much, but kind of the end of Last Night in Soho, it is left open-ended. So I hope they don't do a sequel, because it just wouldn't work. But it is kind of open to one if, you know, a story came up type of thing. And I think they do that these days. Because I think it was Heroes, wasn't it? They cancelled halfway through a season and they kind of left it on a cliffhanger, but then they just never got the money back. And so it was kind of annoying. So I think the Hollywood thing to do these days is, we may do a sequel, but if we don't, you've still got a fairly good conclusion.
I'm going to give this one a go. The Spice Diver, I don't know. I'm going to have to be in the mood, because David Lynch is pretty opaque in a lot of his movies. He's a tough nut to crack. I never got into Twin Peaks. I never really tried it, but I know it's bizarre and people love it, but it's got so much weirdness going on in it. And it's one of those that's kind of on my list to give it a try. But because I remember everybody talking about it back in the day, you know, and people still love it. But I don't know. I've never seen it.
Apparently, the Space Diver is available on YouTube. So that's me sorted this week. I shall put that on my list to watch again.
All right.
It'll be interesting to watch it, actually, because I've seen the new Dune four times, I think. And I do genuinely love it. it'll be interesting then to go back to Lynch's one and see what I make of that.
But yeah, I mean, I respect David Lynch, and I think he's made some really good stuff, and it's just he's like the Green Knight. It's work. It's not it's not just entertainment. There's a bit of work. You have to focus really good on his stuff and try to figure out what he's doing. And it's not it's not turn your brain off type.
It's not how to sit down with a bunch of friends and pizza and beer and chat all the way through it type
thing. And I work all day and I put my brain to God knows what. So I mean, I just don't have the energy to work my way through a David Lynch. It's not that I think he makes bad stuff. It's just
you've got to focus on it. I started watching The Raid 2 the other day and love it as much as I did because it's got the subtitles on. I had to turn it off in the end because I was too tired and I couldn't quite appreciate it. And, you know, sometimes I'm in a mood for something like that and it's great, but then other times when I just want something on, funny enough, I was doing some editing yesterday and so in the background I just had Empire Strikes Back because I'm fine with that in the background. You know, I can quite, you know, it's a background movie for me now. Yeah, exactly. You know, I know everybody's lines, including R2-D2's. I was laughing at I was giggling at the fact that at the end in the frozen chamber thing, that the chief Argonaut is played by Jack Purvis. And I was sat there thinking, oh, it's so sad that I know things like that.
Yeah. Well, I know, do you get, or have you ever seen Cheers? The one with, Cliff Clavin is in it too.
To me, the weirdest one is the general played by Bruce Boer because he was in the episode of Fawlty Towers where he played the annoying American. I think we should wrap this up. Unfortunately,
I think we should too.
Sean halfway through, but thanks for Sean for joining us, and thanks for the people who joined right at the very end. I might say you could have joined earlier and ask questions and given us some discussion, but thank you for joining us. Anyway.
That's okay. It's not like we schedule this on the dot at noon every Sunday, but that's okay.
I still think things should go up on the website the day before, but anyway.
Whatever. I did actually try to put it up the day before, but everybody got mad at me because I put it up with very little SEO. I just throw it up there. Right. And so I got smacked down for that.
You run the website. Do what you like.
You would think. And yet. I plan to see Gucci this week.
Oh, really?
Which my wife really has a Jones in for. But I got to admit, I think it's because it's... oh, God, I hate getting old. I can't remember anything. Who directed Alien? Ridley Scott. Ridley Scott. He's doing this movie. And so Adam Driver, I really like. I've come to really like him as an actor. And so it's got quite a cast, and I'm kind of curious about this. And I'm kind of curious to see what Scott comes up with, because I like him as a director.
But I kind of like him in... for stuff like Alien, when it comes to sort of stuff like this, you know, the whole biopic thing.
Yeah, he did Thelma and Louise. Do you know that?
It's not a biopic, though, is it?
No, but I mean, it's not exactly a sci-fi Alien either. It's two chicks killing themselves, and I approve of that.
You on your own with that one. Yoda can be found at Drunken Yoda 1 on Twitter if you want to complain about that.
Yes, send all your hate mail.
Yeah. But come on, let's wrap up.
Okay, so lastmovieoutpost.com, that's our website. We have the greatest and the best movie news, streaming news, and all kinds of retro, including and current reviews that you can find. We're always updating every day, and we are the cool news. You have any spicy information that you want to give us? Anything that's out there, some juicy rumors that you want to throw to us, you can reach us at contactus@lastmovieoutpost.com. I am at Drunken Yoda 1, and this is at not George Lucas 1. Both of us are on Twitter, and of course you can reach us at Movie Outpost on Twitter for the main site. Please follow us. Of course, we're on YouTube.com/lastmovieoutpost. Would love it if you would subscribe, share these videos. I am working on some work stuff that I have to get done. But once I get past that, I plan to start putting out a lot more videos again. And George, you're putting out a few videos here and there. And of course, we're putting all this on podcasts as well.
Yeah, I missed last week's podcast due to illness, but I will be catching up with it this time around. So, yes, you can find the podcast usually in the middle of the week, and it's about some of the movies that I've seen. I'm still well on my way. I've seen over 850 this year so far, so I'm still on track to do 1,000 before the end of December.
You've done an amazing job, and you've been review Death to Smoochie. Wow, that's one I haven't seen in a long time. Very dark
comedy. I don't think I've seen that. I will put it on my list.
Robin Williams and Edward Norton.
Okay, I will put it on the list. I don't recall it.
It's a dark comedy. It's basically the horrible dark world of children's mascot entertainment.
Thank you for that. I shall put it on the I'll put it on the list. It looks vaguely familiar, but I will put it on the list because I don't recall it. So it's probably one of those ones where halfway through I'll go, oh, yeah, I remember now.
Yeah, it came out early 2000s, maybe even late 90s, but I want to say early 2000s, somewhere around there.
Anyway.
So, yeah, I think I went over everything. Remember to like, share, and subscribe. We really would love it if you would share. Give us those likes, crush that like button, see it driven before you, hear the lamentations of the dislike button. Everybody says smash the like button. I like to come up with something new. But it really helps us with the YouTube algorithm. So the more you help us, the bigger we'll get. And hopefully the more stories and the more time that we'll have, if we could ever make this full time for ourselves. So we'd appreciate it. Anything else, George?
No, all good. Hopefully we'll see everybody next week with a more interesting subject that I came up with this week, which was completely ignored. Sorry, just wanted to get that in there.
It was Ghostbusters Afterlife Week. You knew we had to do it.
No, but nobody's seen it apart from you. Next week, I'm going to say this now. Next week, we're going to talk about whether streaming services are worth their price. See, that's an interesting subject.
I agree. That is an interesting subject. But I give the people what they want. So... You can
really, because you're still wearing a shirt.
Suck it. All right, you take care, everyone, and we will see you on the next stream.
Thanks, guys.